The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. We are so proud to have Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon present all of Ira Kaufman's work on JoeBucksFan.com. They are Hall of Fame dealerships for Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher. Visit them at EdmoresCadillacTampa.com. Not only will you see there all of the great service opportunities and the 2018 Cadillacs, but there are also tremendous offers right now. Sign and drive at Edmore's Cadillac Tampa. 2017 XT5 Luxury. 2017 XT5 Luxury. Just $449 per month. Sign and drive. Zero due. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa has all the details. You can chat online, talk, call them right now, or visit EdmoresCadillacTampa.com to get it all done. They will take fantastic care of you. Edmore's Cadillac Brandon, I know Ira was just there a couple of weeks ago spending a lot of time. Ira's got his eye, he told me, on the 2017 Cadillac ATS, lease for $329 a month, zero due at signing. Sign and drive at Edmore's Cadillac Brandon on Causeway Boulevard. That's where you want to get started. EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com, EdmoresCadillacTampa.com. More than 70 years of Edmore's. Fantastic opportunities. Check them out today.
All right, Coach, you know, we give Ira a lot of crap here on the podcast. He says he knows you, he's your buddy, he loves you. You know, what can you say about Ira that you spent years around him as a journalist, as a guy?
Well, let me tell you this. He's got the greatest voice I ever heard. I can't imitate him well, but he's a friend of mine, and he's a guy I consider great at what he does because he does the work, and he watches practice. He takes pride in you know, getting the story correct, and he's just been loyal. I've always considered him a friend, and I consider him an expert when it comes to pro football.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Happy Tuesday, Kicker Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, a national sports figure in his own right, Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. We're down to man, Ira. No Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks Fan today. He is traveling, but he'll be back next podcast. And Sage, how are you? Sunday of no Bucks football, but plenty of football.
Next man up, Steve. I said it in the column, which lasted about 6 hours until the Bucks made their move. Welcome, Mr. Patrick Murray. I remember you well. He's a good kid. I had a lot of fun with Pat Murray first time around. Good yakker. We got to talking about New York. My only little asterisk about Patrick Murray, and I don't want to jinx him, Steve, but you remember him. He kicks a low ball. He tends to kick a low ball. He's not one of these towering guys like Janikowski, you know, way the hell up in the stratosphere. He's going to hit Sputnik. Murray kicks a low ball.
But is Sputnik still up there?
I don't think so. Or Voyager, you know, with the Chuck Berry record flying around, which I always want to mention every podcast. He's up there with Beethoven and Tchaikovsky. Chuck Berry lives, Steve. Chuck Berry lives. So, look, they had to do something. In response to crazy reports that they were going to stick to Nick Folk, they did not. They did the smart thing. Steve, ultimately, it's a meritocracy in the NFL. It's supposed to be. You got one job. You're not doing it. You're going to lose your job. Maybe Nick Folk gets picked up. We'll see. A lot of Bucks get cut, Steve. They never get picked up. That's been the pattern here over the years. It's been a bit of a disturbing pattern. I guess Jacquees Smith is the latest example. By the way, did I see that Austin Seferian Jenkins might have caught a touchdown pass on Sunday, Steve? Did I notice that?
You might have read that on JoeBucksFan.com, actually. I read ASJ in three games has 15 catches.
From Josh McCown?
From Josh McCown, yeah. 15 catches and a touchdown for a 3-2 football team on the rise.
I still don't forgive him because he stole money from this team for a couple of years.
Well, look, I'm happy for the guy if he's changed his life. However, he never played more than 9 games in a season for the Bucs, so let's see if he can really stay healthy. Otherwise, he's just doing what he does all the time, which is play a little bit.
By the way, Steven, did you notice a man who's in the news? Chris Forster is already gone from the Dolphins, caught on a video using a substance, an embarrassing video, which he's already apologized for. Buck fans may or may not remember. Chris Forster was a member of, I believe, Tony Dungy's staff here, starting in 1996. He's one of the guys, Steve, not the main guy. The main guy would probably be the offensive coordinator, but he's a guy that Dungy got criticized for keeping him on staff year after year, and people didn't think he did a very good job. And we know Dungy's loyalty, Steve. In the end, that probably got him in a little bit of trouble, might have contributed to his dismissal in Tampa. But he was a longtime member of Dungy's staff.
All right, Ira, let's get back to Patrick Murray, the kicker. Now, one thing I remember about Murray in the locker room, is there a more arrogant player in the NFL than Patrick Murray?
He had a lot of confidence in himself. That's putting it mildly.
I mean, the guy is just steaming, brimming with confidence.
Brio, confidence. That's
whatever
it.
You want to call it. It really stood out. And there's plenty of cocky guys in the NFL. This kid really stood out.
That's a good point, Steve.
When he came in 2014, he was a Shiano man, but the Bucs didn't sign him. He was here in 2013. Shiano knew him or whatever, but he didn't stick. Barth was
you don't
kicker.
Mind a confident kicker, Steve, but no. But you think he took it over the line.
Well, I just thought it was fun. I just thought it was fun. Just make your kicks. But you know what? He was here in 2014. They went with a rookie kicker over Barth. And he hit 83%, Ira, which around these parts now is, he's an all-pro.
And polishing off a bust for him in Kent.
I think, he hit 5 of 6 from 50-plus.
Yeah.
The guy could kick. Looked like they got their kicker. And then they brought back Barth in the offseason.
And so there was going to be an open competition.
Going to be a competition. It looked like he was losing that competition. And I got the feeling somebody at the Bucs probably didn't like him. Otherwise, why even create a competition? But regardless, he got hurt.
He got hurt.
And it was moot. And then they went with Brinza. And then all of a sudden, here we go.
And then Murray went on to Cleveland, right, for a bit.
When he got healthy, went to Cleveland, didn't stick, and he's been on the street ever since. And he was actually lately been on Twitter putting out videos of himself kicking off a tee for 10 miles with that low ball that you're worried about. So here we are. The kicking circus goes back to Patrick Murray.
Steve, I'm not convinced he's the answer, but I know Folk wasn't the answer.
As you wrote so eloquently, I'm sure the Folk family will not be sending you a...
the facts of life, Steve.
Thanksgiving card.
Football league. And nobody could argue that Cutter didn't back up Folk. Would you agree with that point? In fact, I think he might have went overboard to defend Folk and to show faith in Folk. So I don't think Folk's got any bitching to do with the Buck organization.
I don't think so. 4 games is tough, but that's what Kyle Brinza got. 4 games from this regime when he was here.
Now, he had more of a resume than Brinza, you know, granted.
Sure.
Granted.
So that's what I'm saying. 4 games is not much. So, Ira, I just checked my phone, and what do you know? Nick Folk is on injured reserve.
Your impeccable source had told you. That's right.
Injured reserve.
Oh, what a phantom.
Now, do you believe he's injured?
Yeah, mentally. Yeah, I think his psyche is torn to shreds. He's got a torn ACL of the psyche. That's what he's got. Look, I don't know. This is some way for the Bucks to play games. I don't know, with a salary or whatever. But we've seen the last of Nick Folk.
Now, why do you think they did this? To save face? Do you think it's this face-saving move where Jason Light is thinking, well, you know what? He did tweak an ankle. It might knock him out for a week. We'll just IR him, and I don't have to deal with him landing with the Chargers and kicking 10 out
Let
of 10.
Let me say this, Steve. Let me say this. If we see Nick Folk kick again for the Tampa Bay Bucks, at least in 2017, it means the season's going to hell. That's what it means. I mean, let's be honest. If Patrick Murray's doing any kind of decent job, you know, Folk rides out the season on IR or gets cut later in the year. If he comes back, what does it mean? It means it's a disaster. So Buck fans don't even want to think about Nick Folk. They want him gone. He's gone for all intents and purposes. Here comes Pat Murray. Put those kicks a little higher, Mr. Murray. A little bit higher. We don't need any blocks going forward.
We've seen this before in the NFL where guys get IR'd with what appear to be phantom injuries. I remember when Byron Leftwich all of a sudden appeared, his elbows messed up. He's
happens
out.
All the time.
Happens all the time. In this situation, I don't get it, but maybe we'll get some clarification.
Might be some kind of procedural, technical type of thing. But, you know, Buck fans don't want to see Nick Folk, and I don't blame him.
Do you predict anybody else landing on IR? Any underperformers?
Yeah, and you know the next guy that the Bucks want to cut, he'll end up on IR. It's a soft place to land. There's a lot of procedural shenanigans that go on in the NFL.
Sure,
Steve. Every week, Jason Light's not above participating in it. So, did you hear anything about a Nick Folk injury? A groin, an ankle, and a knee? You know.
I don't know. Like you said,
the only one feeling injured are Buck fans right now towards Nick Folk. But Steve,
kicker.
Jobs are on the line. Light for one. You could even argue, if the Bucks have a terrible year, then Cutter's in trouble going into 2018. He's on the spot. You know, scouts that might be responsible for Aguayo. So somebody's got to take a fall if things go haywire.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that really stuck with me is that safe bet. The light regime doesn't know how to evaluate a kicker. That's probably the most honest statement we could make at this point about anything related to the Buccaneers. So what changed, Ira? Did anything change? Do you think they brought in Gramatica to watch these guys help out or anything?
There's a theory that anger's a bad holder. You heard that one, too. I think that's people just grasping for straws. Buck-kicking woes go beyond Brian Anger. Before he ever got there, he was still struggling a little bit, still changing kickers every year.
Sure, and I've seen theories of the turf at Raymond James Stadium is screwed up with a guy from New England, Gostkowski, belted four in a row, and he doesn't even play here. So, and from long distance, many
you
of
know,
them.
You know the irony, Steve? Here's an ironic point for the last 20 games, let's say. With all the circus atmosphere that's surrounded the kicking situation at One Buck Place, there hasn't been a missed field goal with 30 seconds left and the Bucks down by 2 points. It hasn't happened, but we don't have to wait for that. And I think that's Cutter's point. Do we have to wait for that, Jason Light? Let's not wait for that. Jobs are on the line. You could argue that the miss last week, which would have brought the Bucks within one score, was a very major factor in that loss.
No, it was huge, Ira. You could blame
that. But you know what I mean. That kick with 21 seconds left, sure. that 33-yarder.
The dramatic miss, if you will.
Yeah, we haven't had that.
But Nick Folk missing from 31, that forces, people will argue about this, but that prompts Cutter to, when he was down 16-14, to go for the onside kick. And New England got a field goal. He doesn't do that if he's trailing by, in that case, he would have been winning 17-16. So it's a whole different game. The kicking cost them that game, among other things, but you could really lay that one on kicking. And that's why Folk's gone. It's a nut house. Now, Ira, I'm going to go here with you. I know you probably don't want to, but I'm going to go here with you. And I know it's four games and you can shut me down because we're 2-2. Haven't started this well since 2011.
In a strong division.
And coming off, we started with a hurricane and a screwy situation. 2-2. Bucks are in fine shape. But you seem a little nervous about Jason Light. A little nervous. Am I reading that properly?
I think you are. Look, I'm not going to argue with your first point because I made it even after the heartbreaking loss to the Patriots. They're not in bad shape. Unfortunately, the NFC South is 11-6, the best record in the National Football League. I don't think you and I are very surprised about that. And that's with two teams having a bye, New Orleans and Atlanta this past weekend. Otherwise, we might be looking at 13 wins out of this division, which would easily lead. I don't think they're in bad shape, Steve, but you can't go south and finish 8-8. I think somebody's going to have to take the fall. I don't know if it's a scout, the special teams coach, or it might go higher than that. If you really want to look at it honestly, Steve, I think Jason Light's got a lot of goodwill in the bank. I mean, he's made a lot of good draft picks. Kendall Beckwith being just he's got a knack for finding these people. I mean, Beckwith and Alexander, that's fantastic. I don't think Buck fans are upset with Jameis Winston. They think he can play a little better, and he can, and he needs to. The very first pick he made was Mike Evans. I mean, that's not a bad start. So, having said that, if things don't go well, going into January 2nd or whatever, Jason Light is wondering about his future, and rightfully so. The Glazers want to see what's going to happen, obviously, this season. 9-7 wasn't good enough for them to pull the trigger on Jason Light's extension. Wasn't good enough. Those are the facts. So we got to see what happens the rest. Yeah, Jason Light's nervous. He's nervous until he gets that extension. We will see. I don't think they're in bad shape, Steve. I think we'll talk more about it, but this is not a bad schedule right now going forward. I know they're playing 6 of 8 on the road, but when you start with the Arizona Cardinals, who are not a very good football team, Steve, they're not very good. Go out there and flatten Carson Palmer like he deserves to be.
Nothing's fair in the NFL necessarily. Business, it's ruthless. It's the way it is. But is it fair? I mean, where do you personally draw the line if you say somebody might have to take the fall? And in this broad hypothetical, you were saying Jason Light or somebody in personnel. If the Bucs went 8-8 in your
hypothetical. As opposed to Cutter, yes.
Right, in your hypothetical. Well, is it fair to say, look, a general manager doesn't play games? And if you go 8-8, that means you had a few bounces, a few issues here or there. A lot of that comes down to guys executing and playing. And can you just throw that out? Is that fair? I mean, general managers don't coach, they don't play.
Steve, I think it depends what contributes the most to the 8-8. Is it a bad kicking situation that lingers all year? Is it the lack of an outside pass rush that Light you know, could have addressed in free agency or the draft. It depends. The more you think about it, Steve, and I think even you, very, very grudging to give me any credit on any topic, would have to say, vis-a-vis Light and Cutter in terms of, if, you know, this team goes 6-10 or 7-9, which is unlikely. Unlikely. But if it happens, I think Cutter's got the get-out-of-jail-free card. His name's Jameis Winston. Light doesn't have it. Yeah, Light drafted him. But the reason Cutter's got the job is, you know, he's got a good relationship with Winston. Now, if Winston turns on Cutter, look out. I don't see it happening.
No, no. And I know we're playing very negative in our conversation here. I don't want fans to be like, oh, you guys are negative. That's not
the case. It's a conversation for late December.
That's not the case. It's a fine conversation for now, Ira. It's fine.
I think the Bucs are in good shape.
Yeah, just the other day on your podcast, you said, on your last podcast, you believe this is still a 10-6 team. I think they should get there as well. In the NFC this year, I don't think that'll be enough. We had a few years in this decade in the NFC where 11-5 is what you needed for a wild card, and it looks like that is one of those years.
I don't know if they're good enough to go 11-5, Steve. That's high cotton.
I'm not sure they are either. But, you know, there's plenty of positive on the Bucs front. But
I wouldn't be surprised if they run off a winning streak right now. I would not be surprised. With a little extra time to prepare and heal up, Winston plays a little bit better. Murray makes some kicks. I wouldn't be surprised they go on a 5-game winning streak.
Now, Ira, when you heard Dirk Cutter say 6-8 drops, depending on who's assessing in the last game, when you hear that from the head coach, that's a lot of drops. That's a tremendous amount of drops if you extrapolate that big word over the course of the season.
Steve, even one from Cameron Brate is not alarming, but very surprising, because that guy catches everything within his radius.
4 drops is a lot in one game. Now, you hear 6-8. Does that take a lot off Winston for you? The game that you say he played, which wasn't good enough, is that get him off the hook a little bit?
I don't think so. I don't think he was very effective through 3 quarters. You know, that's a lot of Jameis Winston's DNA and his blueprint. Florida State, he had a lot of bad first halves,
sure,
especially as a sophomore. Especially, not so much as a freshman. But I can remember 3 or 4 games when they were down, maybe even big at halftime. And Florida State had so much talent. You know, and Winston picked his game up in the second half. Next thing you know, this final scoreboard, you know, FSU wins by 17. Nobody remembers that they were down 10 at the half, and he threw one or two picks. No, I'm not letting Winston out of this. I don't think he was very effective the first 3 quarters. And I'm not letting Cutter off the hook either, Steve. That was not a finest hour for Dirk Cutter. And I think even if we strap him to a lie detector, I think he'd admit it, Steve. He's very creative, and we need to see that again. I go back to 2015 when he wasn't shackled by all the responsibilities, Steve, all the administrative duties of being a head coach. But I'm not offering that as an excuse. He was a fantastic offensive coordinator for the 2015 Bucs. And I'll bring up Charles Sims. The way he used Sims was fantastic. I've mentioned it many times on this broadcast. DeKemper's not here, so I can mention Charles Sims by name.
Go, Chuck.
So I want to see, Steve, how many times can I say it? Now, you watch the Chiefs, and I'm a Chiefs fan, and Andy Reid's doing a fantastic job with that offense. Now, he's got Kareem Hunt, and the Bucs don't. But Doug Martin looked very good the other night. Kareem Hunt is arguably the MVP of this league. If he's not, it's Alex Smith.
He is.
I think he is.
Right now, he is.
I think he is.
He's on pace for 2,000 yards.
But you got a stud tight end, and you got the fastest guy in football, the most dangerous man in football. He did it again last night. You know, every punt return, you're holding your breath with this guy. If he turns that corner, he's gone, Tyreek Hill. But Reed's very creative in getting Hill the ball in space, bubble screens, slants. I want to see more of Cutter doing that with DeSean Jackson, and I want to see more deep passes to DeSean. Cutter's tired of hearing me say it. You're tired of hearing me say it, but I'm going to keep saying it. Get your flags. Get your flags in this league. These guys don't turn around. They don't know how to play corner, most of them. Give DeSean Jackson a chance, and Mike Smith while you're at it.
Yeah, I agree with you with the DeSean Jackson. Look, he's on pace for 1,000 yards. He has 30 targets already. It's not a question of them not going his way. It's just not clicking, but part of that has to go back to the play caller and getting him involved. Now, I understand that explosive slant and run the other night. You know, the Patriots were in a soft zone.
He almost broke that, Stephen. He did.
Patriots were in a soft zone, allowing him to make that catch. But he exploded past those guys. I'm a big fan. I've become obsessed with this next gen NFL data, the computer chips and the balls and all
that
stuff.
I hate to break this to you, but you're not next gen, Isbits. You're old gen. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, I'm going to be nice, Ira.
You're right.
I'm
going to
be nice.
Okay.
I'm
going to
be nice. Right
anyway,
there.
Tell me about this.
Come on.
Tell me about this next gen.
Let's not get carried away, Ira. Come on.
Tell me about this next gen.
This next gen data. DeSean Jackson, that run that he had against, I knew it. As soon as I saw that run, and we all saw the intense explosiveness and the otherworldly type of play that was.
How he gets into another gear very quickly.
I mean, everybody who watched it saw it. Breathtaking stuff. That's why you pay $80 to go to a game, is to see something like that. Awesome. Well, I was waiting for the next gen data to come out because I figured that run would make like the top run of the week or close to it. Well, it was, I think, third fastest run of a player that week. I think he hit 20.5 miles an hour. And I went back into some other data from last year, and Tyreek Hill, top two runs of the year in speed, but both of those were on returns.
Returns, okay.
The third fastest run of the year recorded by an NFL player, DeSean Jackson on a pass.
So on a pass, he was number one.
On a pass, he was number one running a route. Fastest guy running a route in the NFL. They got to use that, and they got to figure it out. I don't care how it goes or what. They got to figure it out. And, yes, I hear everybody right now saying, yeah, he was 5 yards open. Jameis couldn't hit him. I get it. They still have to do more. Have to do more. It's critical in this game in Arizona, especially on the turf where he can explode, and he actually had that incredible run against Arizona last year.
You know, maybe Patrick Peterson gets tied up with Mike Evans all day long. Okay, here's your chance, DeSean.
Yeah, they gotta take advantage of it. Now, one thing I wanted to go back to something you said, Ira, because I can't let anything go. Going back to our hypothetical negative conversation,
right?
You said Dirk Cutter's get out of jail card would be Jameis if the Bucs had a bad year. The Bucs want to keep that continuity with the offensive coordinator.
Don't tell me you're thinking of what if the Glazers turn on Jameis. You're not going to say
No. Don't be ridiculous. That's what right. I think a bigger get out of jail free card in that hypothetical is Mike Smith. Mike Smith is Cutter's guy. They locked him in for 2 years. The defense is good. I don't think they would want to just blow the team up and knowing Mike Smith's out of here the minute his extra year runs out. I think the defense really at this point, outside of a couple of horrible performances.
And they need to step it up, Steve, on third down. They got to do better on third down. And they're not doing well enough on third down.
Aside from some bad stuff from Vernon Hargraves, and as a whole, though, I think there's a lot of good things going on. And I like what it looks like going forward.
Oh, I love the rest of the season. Those three healthy linebackers are very scary, Steve. That's a heck of a unit.
Very, very scary. But, you know, I think the Bucs are going to be fine this year. And I think we discussed this state of the team. We always try to ask you that. And I think we have a good feeling. And that's a good thing.
Now, Steve, having said that, I didn't think Carolina would be 4-1 at this point. Heck of a win in Gillette Stadium where they've already lost twice, New England. Usually, a lot of times they go 8-0.
Ira, they just won in New England and at Detroit.
Yeah.
Come on.
At Detroit, we had played good football.
They were 3-1. I mean, think of what the Panthers have just
accomplished. And the only game they lost was the Atlanta game, which was very competitive. And, that play call at the end, that was Detroit's only loss.
Exactly. So what the Panthers have accomplished is scary. If you watch that game, Cam Newton coming off shoulder surgery.
He's starting to play better.
He's throwing 68% clip.
Without Greg Olsen.
Without Greg Olsen, who I believe is coming back.
I don't know if he'll be back for the Bucs game. We'll see.
No, he's not coming back for the Bucs game, but he's coming back.
He's coming back later this season
on that half year.
You know, McCaffrey hasn't been spectacular. He's been good, but Cam's coming on strong. And their defense is good.
You really see the talent in McCaffrey on the field, though. You watch him. He's not tearing up the league like Leonard Fournette or your guy in Kansas City, Hunt. But he's a tough matchup.
Yeah, he's a tough matchup.
Kelvin Benjamin's coming around, but forget about all those guys. Cam Newton obviously drives the team, and the defense is solid. Pass rush is there. Julius Peppers, I think, has more.
Unbelievable.
5.5 sacks.
Unbelievable. Julius Peppers. Unbelievable.
Did the Bucs make a run at him, Ira? Now they're talking to Lamar Houston, I think, coming off
his Hall of Famer. Julius Peppers, maybe a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Maybe.
He's still doing it.
He's hands down first ballot.
Yeah, if Jason Taylor hands got down. In, then he does. That's right.
I mean, he's done it.
You hear that, Simeon? We're talking about Julius Peppers, Simeon. Heck of a player. Heck of a player.
Tremendous production that Carolina's getting out of him. But that's an excellent team. And the Bucs' situation here, Ira, the next three games, at Arizona.
At Buffalo.
I mentioned to you off the podcast that double-digit losses for Arizona in their three losses. And their only wins field goal against the Colts, field goal against the Niners. A couple of bad teams. They just
best
got
offensive players on the shelf. David Johnson.
Best guy on the shelf. This has got to be considered a must-win for the Bucs.
You know, now, that doesn't mean that Arizona won't be favored by a point or two. Doesn't mean that. I wouldn't be shocked. We know what happened last time the Bucs went out to the desert. They faded like a desert flower over there, my man. Got to win this game, Steve. You got extra time to prepare. You got guys coming back. You're going to be pretty healthy. You're going to be pretty healthy. If David or Alexander don't, one of them's got to play. If not both. I think both of them are going to play.
And we learned last podcast they told you they were playing in this next game.
I also went up to Quan Alexander and said, I'm not talking to you anymore. And he said, what do you mean, Ira? And I said, you told me after the Chicago game you're fine. He says, I was fine. I retweaked it. I guess it was in practice that week, you know, before they,
bode well,
before
we
they went
hope.
To Minnesota.
We can hope.
Boy, what a linebacking trio with speed that is. But, Steve, we still want to see a little outside pressure. The inside pressure was very good on Brady. Very good.
Very good.
You noticed the swaggy Baker that night. He made a few plays. And I think McDonald's playing well. And McCoy's playing McCoy's, at a Pro Bowl level again.
McCoy's having a great start. Probably the best start of his career.
Looks healthy.
All around. You know, well, he's had the ankle issues in multiple games, but the guy's tough. Guy plays through some of these things.
Got to get Hargrave straightened out, Steve. Got to get Hargrave. I don't know. Mike Smith's going to have to talk to this guy. I thought he straightened him out in the offseason.
I'm not sure. I don't have any faith that that's going to happen. I don't know how that happens, Ira, because, and I'm asking for your sage wisdom, Ira. Asking for your sage wisdom. We know. We heard it. We saw it. We've dealt with this. We know all offseason they told the guy, jack up the aggressiveness. Go for it. Don't think. Play. You're good. He can't do it. He can't do it. So what's going to flick a switch where this guy's all of a sudden going to feel confident?
He looks too worried about getting beat deep, Steve. And the irony is, you know, in the Minnesota game, they all got beat deep, even with the soft coverage. Look, maybe you rotate some help his way. Grimes doesn't need much help, Steve. Or maybe there's some things Mike Smith can do. But Hargraves is still giving that cushion, Steve. He's still being driven off the ball. And he's 5 yards away when the guy makes the catch. It's a first-round pick, Steve. He's got to step it up. Again, reflection on Jason Light, good or bad, Vernon Hargraves.
Yeah, it's a mental thing, which I don't know. I don't know. The Bucs haven't had a lot of luck reversing mental issues. Let's look at the kicker situation. But I don't know. I'm scared that it's not going to right itself very quickly. And, you know, that becomes a weakness on this team, you know, really, especially when they get up against the better ball club.
Ayers is starting to play better, Steve. I'm noticing Robert Ayers. I called him out a few weeks ago. I said, look, you're a great leader. That only takes you so far. They didn't signed you because you got 9.5 sacks with the Giants. And you're a good leader. You know, give me 7 or 8 sacks. I'm not asking for 10. God forbid somebody gets 10 sacks on the Buccaneers. We'd fall off our seat right here in the park, Stephen. But Ayers is starting to play better. So I think that's a good sign. But it's not enough coming off that edge, Steve. It's just not enough. The inside guys can't do it by themselves. You know, they got 4 sacks in 4 games, Steve. It's not all about the sacks. I want to, you know, hearken. I want to say it before Mike Smith can get to the podium Wednesday and say it, because he's going to say it. But Mike, against Minnesota and against the Giants, they didn't get enough pressures. They didn't get enough pressures.
No, not even close. And frankly, we already discussed this on a level, but we can agree to disagree. But even against the Patriots, if Brady's throwing for 75% and he's not a career 70% thrower, that means you didn't ruffle him enough, and your coverage was lousy on the back end. So,
hey, one thing, Steve, I don't think we mentioned after the Sunday game. Of course, we were groggy at 1 o'clock in the morning, but I don't think we gave enough props. You know, Doug Martin looked good, no question about it. But Steve, 3, 4, 5 of those carries, there was a big hole for Doug Martin, a bigger hole than we're used to around here. Got him to the second level. When Doug Martin gets to the second level, those are the years he gets 1,400 yards, and there's been 2 of them. Give the interior the line. They did a nice job.
Yeah, and Cutter said you were at his postgame news conference.
I asked about Marpet, yes.
He said the line got great marks across the board, and they did play very well. The pass protection continues to be strong. Jacquez's blown blitz aside that got Jameis creamed in the end zone. Yeah, they deserve a lot of credit. And Jason Light deserves a lot of credit for the current offensive line, for its construction.
Sweezy's playing well.
For its depth. And those were all positive things. It was interesting just because it was so glaring, so outstanding. You got to look at it. If you go back to the highlights of the game against the Patriots, if you go to NFL.com, even just look at the general team highlights, they show Doug Martin plowing over right guard to the goal line where they signaled touchdown, but then they pulled it back to the half-yard line. Watch that play, Ira, and you will see O.J. Howard with one of the most egregious WWE-style holds on a takedown. No call. And that made the whole hole right there. So I'm not knocking the line or whatever. That's part of the game. But, I mean, it was so bad. Literally, Ira, he was holding with two hands the defender's arm, pulling on him like a tug-of-war. And he took him down, and the guy was screaming for a flag. And it's almost – if you watch it, the more you watch it, the funnier it is. But otherwise, the line did a great job. And, you know, Martin –
I'm going to ask you a tough question here, Steve, because you're a tough guy. And a lot of Buck fans are thinking about this question. It goes right to the heart of the matter. If Winston doesn't play better than he's played in the first four games, is this team going to the playoffs? That's a straight question. If he doesn't play better than he's played in these four games, are they going to the playoffs?
Better.
I didn't say a lot better. I said better.
No, because they're not going to go 8-4, which is what they need to do minimum.
8-4.
They're not going to go 8-4 if Jameis plays status quo. I don't believe it. I don't think there's enough there otherwise. Not enough pass rush. Not enough. That's not a knock on Jameis. But as we've said before on this podcast and just in general, if it turns out this season that he is the fourth best quarterback in the NFC South, if that's how it plays out, they're not going to make the playoffs.
And then you're facing that for the next 3 years till
Brees
hangs it up.
No, 1 year at a time. But right. If in these next 12 games, if he's not – in the top three in the NFC South, how are they going to get there, given everything else going on in the division or in the conference? Going to be very tough. But I think he will step up. He's going to have some great games. He's going to at least have some major league connections with DeSean Jackson. I think they probably got a couple blowouts in their back pocket.
He hasn't thrown a pick the last two games, right, Steve?
He's only thrown a pick in one out of four games, which is, hey, we all would have taken that earlier. And I keep going back to the drops because, you know what, the drops are drops. They're not on the quarterback, and this is a very different game. And this is the beauty of the NFL, Ira. Razor-sharp game against the Patriots. If they win that, we're all hailing Jameis. He's 3-1.
If he makes the last play, right? The last completion.
Whatever it is. Somehow they win that
game.
What
a comeback.
What a leader. He turned the corner, won his national TV against Brady. You know, it's that thin of a margin. Now, speaking of thin margin, and we'll wrap it up here, Sage. Tight podcast here on a Tuesday.
We'll expand it on for Thursday. Yeah.
You know what, Ira? We'll expand it when we want to expand it. How about that? Ray, speaking of razor-thin margin.
You're not going to mention chicken paprikash, are you? All right.
No chicken paprikash. Right.
Pat Murray?
Patrick Murray.
You're going full circle here, Stephen. Back to Patrick Murray.
It's what we do as professionals.
Again, his ego? His ego's bugging you?
No. I like his ego. Patrick Murray.
Okay.
Razor thin margin. How much rope does he get? When you bring in a new kicker like this, how much rope do you got to give him? If he goes to Arizona and he hits from 39 and misses from 42, how does this go down?
He gets two or three games and then they sign Santos if they're not happy. Now somebody else could sign Santos. He could be ready. I think he may have a groin or something. He's a pretty good kicker for the Chiefs. And you know, one of our readers astutely pointed out, because I mentioned in the column, Steven, you know this for a fact. People find kickers every week in this league, every year. They find kickers. You never heard of the guy. You know, undrafted. And the guy comes in, and look at the Chiefs guy. I mean, he's coming in for Santos, you know, during season, and the Chiefs haven't missed a beat. The guy's solid. Everything goes right down the middle. I've been watching Chiefs games all season. Every kick strong, confident.
You've been watching the Chiefs since 48.
I haven't done a damn thing since 1970. Not a damn thing. And that's a long time, Steve. But, Steve, they don't go too long with Patrick Murray. I mean, they can't. He's got two or three games to prove himself, and then it's on to somebody else. That's the way it is in this league.
All right, Ira, it's been good seeing you here on a Tuesday. You look refreshed, of course.
Thank you, my friend. We enjoyed
you very much. Kaufman's Corner on Fox 13 at Scott Smith's Tailgate Sunday. They're a great segment. Great segment, Ira. You mentioned the chicken paprikash.
I did.
Couldn't believe it. I'm sitting on my couch. I'm like, how does Calvin work in a chicken paprikash?
Steve, do you want to tell our listeners what happened when we went to our first little bay here in this beautiful park, and all of a sudden we encountered something?
Well, our usual podcast spot, of course, we go to sit down, and we weren't paying close attention by the picnic benches, and there was a homeless man there sleeping, and we moved. So,
sure I wasn't a former Buck kicker?
Might have been. So that was, you know, sad, of course, but a little surprising. But I will say Ira wanted to stay.
I did.
Ira wanted to stay. And I'm thinking, you know what? Maybe the guy's going to, you know, start dreaming. He's hearing you in the background. He thinks he's died and gone to Brooklyn, and he's in trouble. All right.
So we will welcome Mr. DeKemper back for Thursday's podcast, correct?
Excellent. Yes. And as I mentioned earlier in our quick little note in the opening, of course, you'll be at Abe's place October 22nd, 1 o'clock. You'll be there early.
For another very winnable game, Mr. Isbitz.
Bucks watch party at Abe's place. All the details on joebucksfan.com. And, of course, your fan retreat has been rescheduled night before the Falcons game. It's going to be fun. We'll be out there. Some special guests will be out there, more than you even know.
I can't wait to see that stadium, Steve. I'm very curious.
That's going to be fun, and fans can join you at the fan retreat absolutely free.
And I'll have a couple of stories. I'll give a little brief talk.
Beer, pizza, a lot of fun with the Sage, chatting it up, sharing some insider info.
Chicken paprikash could be on the menu. You never know.
We'll get with fan retreat on that, on the chicken paprikash. Get out of here, Ira.